Okay, the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs will get started. It's Monday, February 19th. We're going to first start with House File 108. Representative Morrow, are you in the room? Members, it is my intention that we will be hearing all of these local option sales tax bills today. We will be passing them on to the tax committee without recommendation, but this is our opportunity to talk about the policy implications of these. So if you have questions, I would encourage you to ask them. But we do have four local option sales tax. However, Representative Pawlowski's bill is not being introduced until tonight's session, so we technically don't have possession of it. We're going to hear it. We're going to get all the information on it, and then it is my intention to bring it up as soon as we get it and then pass it on to taxes. Any questions from members about my intentions before we get started? All right. With that, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm here on House File 108.
I would move that House File 108 be moved without recommendation to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have with me here today Mayor Gary Zelmer of North Mankato, and Wendell Sandy, who's the City Administrator of North Mankato. And you're also getting a handout today, members of the committee, regarding the five projects under this bill. This is the City of North Mankato is seeking authorization to impose a half-cent sales tax by ordinance, capped at $6 million. Voters approved this local option sales tax in November 2006 in the general election by a 2-to-1 margin. Had the support of sport associations and others from around the region, and I know that both Mayor Zelmer and Administrator Sandy will talk more about the regional support of these projects. The five projects are listed on the sheet coming around: local share of the 1441 interchange, regional parks, hiking and biking trails, expansion of the library, riverfront development, and more. In 2006, the City of North Mankato brought a previous bill which was not adopted. For that reason, the city went to local voters to garner their support before coming back to the legislature. And with that, I'll turn it to Mayor Zelmer and Administrator Sandy.
Mayor Zelmer, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to come back again this year and present our bill to the committee. Representative Morrow did an excellent job of summarizing why we're here. We have a number of needs in our city that are regional in nature, that need to be supported by a funding source that isn't available right now. And in addition, I just want to bring your attention that across the river from us, the City of Mankato has had this sales tax in place for a number of years for a number of buildings that they have put up, which is the Civic Center and the airport, and their downtown redevelopment, which has been a major boost for their downtown area, the riverfront area. And we were not part of that original bill, but yet we've been paying it and helping support Mankato. And one of the reasons that it went through North Mankato so easily was the fact that generally we're paying it right now. Our citizens go to Mankato to do most of their shopping. Basically, we're the bedroom community across the river as such, but with a lot of industry. And we bring a lot of people from not only Mankato and the North Mankato, but also from the regional area around us. So for us, this was a no-brainer to come back again and look at it, because we feel it's a way to regionally support these areas. And I just want to bring your attention. This was supported by the North Mankato Civic and Commerce, the Commerce on Commerce Group, which is the Upper North Mankato Group, the Greater Mankato Chamber of Commerce, the Greater Mankato Economic Development Group, all sporting groups, youth and adult groups were supporting this and actually helped walk around with flyers for the community expressing their interest in us going ahead with this. The Friends of the Library, which is a regional group of Blue Earth County and Nicollet County that support our local libraries. And both Nicollet County and Blue Earth County have been in support of this. So it's a regional effort on our part, and we've got general support from the entire area. And I'll let Wendell talk about the details of it, but we not only have these small things, we have one of the greatest softball facilities in all of Minnesota down at Caswell Park, in which it hosts every year the state high school girls fast pitch tournament. We also have done two national tournaments now in the last 2 years. We have another one coming in. These are tournaments that are bringing in teams from all over the country and internationally. We actually had a team here last year from Japan that came and played in the tournament. That's 125 to 150 teams that are coming in from all over. And basically, that's what we need the money for, is those people are coming in, that 0.5% sales tax will help support that facility. With that, I'll turn it over to Wendell to get more of the details, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions later on.
If I could just interrupt for just one moment. We officially have a quorum. This meeting is officially called to order. Okay, with that, go ahead. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wendell Sandy. I am the city administrator for the city of North Mankato. And as the mayor alluded to, we've gone through a fairly extensive process building up to the referendum that was held last fall for these projects and garnered, I think, a lot of community support for our efforts. The specific projects, the first one is a portion of the local share of the county state aid Highway 41 Trunk Highway 14 project. This is the next phase of our future industrial park, and we have something in excess of 4,000 jobs in our existing industrial parks and look to capitalize on that for the future. And obviously, Trunk Highway 14 is a major connector throughout our region. The biggest area of our request is the development of regional parks and hiking and biking trails. This would connect our regional parks, of which we have three, Caswell Park, Benson Park, and Spring Lake Park, with the trail system throughout our area, both in Blue Earth and Nicollet counties, and would, in cooperation with the city of Mankato, ultimately connect us to the Cicada Singing Hills Trail. The expansion of the North Mankato Library, we built a new library about 6 years ago. It has exceeded the city council's expectation, I think, in just about every way. And in cooperation with our funding partners at Nicollet County and Blue Earth County, we operate the bookmobile service in the area. I'd reach out to the small communities, the homeschoolers, the daycares, and other library patrons that aren't readily able to come to the main library itself. So the expansion of the library will assist us to continue to provide that service throughout the region. And then in conjunction with the city of Mankato, we have done what's called the Envision 2020 plan. It's intended to create a vision for the greater North Mankato area for the year 2020 and includes a number of redevelopment activities in the two downtowns which face each other across the Minnesota River. We've asked for an allocation of funding for that project. And then the last item on the list is lake improvement projects. We have a lake at Spring Lake in Lower North and a new lake at Benson Park on the hilltop. And we'd like to make a number of access and other improvements to both those lakes. And with that, I'd be happy to respond to any questions that committee members might have.
All right, questions from the members. All right. Is there any? Oh, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to point out both Administrator Sandy and Mayor Zellmer have worked with me now for a number of months on this idea, having come before the legislature before, and I would like to thank them both for their very positive take on this. They've done everything they think the legislature asked them to do, including going to the voters for a vote before coming to the legislature for authorization. So that, to me, has been a tremendous commitment on their behalf to highlight the regional significance and the local support for this project.
All right. Thank you, Representative Morrow. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Representative Morrow's advocacy on this. He and I have talked a number of times on this, and I appreciate the way you have brought this forward and really pushed it. You've really done a great job with that. And I just want to say that on March 2nd is when we plan to hear the local sales tax bills in property tax division, just for those who... These will get passed on to the tax committee, and then Chair Lincheski will refer that back down to the division. But we're looking at March 2nd for that date also. So thank you very much, and also the testifiers.
Thank you.
Great. With that, I renew my motion that House File 108 be re-referred without recommendation to the tax committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam.
All right, next on the list is Representative Hilty, House File 885.
Good
Now, members, Pat Dalton is here in the committee in case we do have tax questions. Although we do not have authority over the tax piece, we do want to make sure that if members have questions, they get them answered. I would move that House File 885 be passed on to the tax, referred to the tax committee without recommendation. With that, Representative Hilty, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 885 is a bill which would provide for the imposition of pending voter approval in a referendum for a half cent additional sales tax for the city of Cloquet. We have this is a bill that we have in one form or another been pursuing for some number of years now, and over that period of time, some of the projects that had been included have been eliminated and others added. What is currently being proposed as the projects that would be covered by a $15 million bond issue to run over up to 30 years would be for the city and the region park improvements, including a swimming pool complex, a soccer complex, a baseball complex, an arena, and other park and trail projects as well, including the construction of a community center, the extension of utilities to the newly constructed or under construction industrial park, and a number of infrastructure improvements which can be described by our testifiers. And Madam Chair, with me this afternoon I have the Mayor of Cloquet, Mr. Bruce Algren, and the City Administrator, Brian Fritzinger, and I would turn it over to them to describe the project.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, please state your name for the record and go ahead.
It's Bruce Algren, that's A-H-L-G-R-E-N, and I'm the Mayor of Cloquet, and I want to thank Madam Chair and the members of the committee for letting us testify here today. One, I know that the sales tax issue is of regional significance, and one of the things I'd like to see about Cloquet, Cloquet's up in northeastern Minnesota, about 20 miles from Duluth. Duluth, Two Harbors, Proctor, and Hermantown all have sales taxes, and we've been trying for 7 years to get a sales tax, and as other cities have gotten them, we've been rejected all those years. The regional significance that I want to talk about in Cloquet is that is for our taxpayers, because our city right now really services Esco, Scanlon, Carlton, Renshaw, Brookston, Cromwell, and Floodwood, the rural towns in our area who we provide services for. We provide library services. I say law library because I'm a court administrator. It's library services. We also provide senior citizen services for the entire area. We also have a significant, Cloquet has a significant amount of ambulance runs and first responders and fire for all the rural areas, and they especially with the ambulance, we sometimes go 30, 40 miles away to help other departments because they don't have first responders on there. So these are burdens on the city of Cloquet tax dollars that we give to our entire area. One of the other significant things with the city of Cloquet, and we are always in the top five in taxes in the state of Minnesota, we have a large reservation that the federal government had a treaty in 1854 that said that they don't have to pay personal property taxes, and 50% of the reservation is in the city of Cloquet, but yet we still provide roads and maintenance. We provide police and fire. We also provide ambulance service for them. We've asked the federal government to explain to us why, if they have a federal treaty, why the citizens of Cloquet are paying for that federal treaty, and if we can get reimbursed. To this date, they have not responded to us in any way, so, and I don't expect that they're going to. One of the other things is that with our recreation programs, and Brian Fitzinger will be talking about this shortly, is the fact that our schools are quite close together. We have eight schools within a short distance from each other, and they use all of our, a lot of our facilities, and we have programs together with pairing and sharing through the schools. So truly the regional significance is the fact that we do provide for all the other rural, small rural towns, including southern St. Louis County. With that, thank you very much. And if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
All right. Mr. Fritzinger?
Yes.
Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Brian Fritzinger, City Administrator with the City of Cloquet. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity here today. Briefly, what I'll do is just touch base on more specifics to the projects that the mayor has addressed here. The first really is economic development. Within our community, historically, we've been considered a mill town. We have a major paper industry, which used to be Potlatch, now Sappi. Over the last few years, was purchased by Sappi, a company from South Africa. Over that time frame, our community has lost approximately 500 jobs as a result of that change, as well as some other dynamics in town with some of our other industries that deal with wood products. We've seen some of our Diamond Brands, which also produces match, is one of the last matchmaker companies in the United States, has lost a significant amount of their business to China in terms of the method and the costs related to that product here in the United States. So, from the city's perspective, the diversification into some other areas of the economy is very important. The Business Park project that we have in Cloquet is roughly a $4 million project, of which we are working with a number of other jurisdictions to put together. Carlton County, State of Minnesota through DEED, as well as the federal government are all participating with us in putting that project together. It's about a 120-acre business park, which we currently have four businesses that we're working with that will be locating into that park. The sales tax would allow us to defease the debt from the bonds that are being issued for that project, and will hopefully allow us to, again, continue to be competitive within the market area of Duluth and Cloquet. We have a significant amount of people that come from the region and work in Cloquet because of some of the high-paying jobs that we have there. So we'll see people coming from as far as an hour away, Virginia Hibbing area, to come down and work within the industries that we have in town. So we want to make sure that we're doing a good job in terms of providing work for both our people that work in Cloquet as well as others that come into the area. The second component of our bill is really to utilize some of the funds for construction and completion of a variety of parks projects. As Mayor Algren has testified, because of our location, we have a significant amount of people that come to our community to participate in our parks programs through the school district in the city who has most of the parks facilities within it. We have a six-field baseball-softball complex that was constructed recently, which is, in essence, used nonstop throughout the season and cannot currently accommodate the demand that we have for field usage in our community. A portion of these proceeds would be utilized to help us expand and enhance that service. One of the most major projects we have before us right now is the replacement of our community swimming pool complex. It's one which was built about 26 years ago through lock-on monies, local monies that funded that project. Right now, that project facility has reached the end of its useful life, and the City Council, as well as the community, has spent a great deal of time evaluating how to utilize that complex in combination with a possible community center. That community center has had a number of players at the table, including our school district, private business, and others, to see how we could do a project in the community that would make sense for the region, as well as some of the needs that we have directly. Other projects that are part of the parks component of this deal with the St. Louis River. St. Louis River, as you may know, runs from Lake Superior all the way up through northern Minnesota through our community. It's been identified as one of those really prime pieces for recreation opportunities, and we have undertaken a number of studies now in trying to figure out how to utilize that to provide aspects for tourism within Cloquet. The trails proposed from Cloquet that would run all the way up to Highway 2, which is about 15 miles away. And during the last legislative session, the legislature did approve some funds through the DNR that would be used to connect Cloquet back to the Munger Trail, which is about 8-9 miles south of us. So what we're looking at here is funds that would allow us to really connect to a much broader area of the community, as well as some in-house activities. And then the last aspect of the proposal would be in the area of infrastructure. As Mayor Algren has testified, we have a number of issues which affect us financially in terms of how we can provide service. Those combined with some of the impacts over the last few years of local government aid cuts have really hit us very hard as we provide services to an area that doesn't pay taxes to our community. We have lost about 30% of our LGA over the last 6 years. Even this year, again, we were faced with another $170,000 loss in that aid. So it's really hit us hard in terms of how we provide services to our residents and some of the other issues. We've seen some of the other communities that are around us that have used the sales tax to provide certain infrastructure improvements, and we believe that as we continue to expand as a community, that those infrastructure improvements are very important to us to figure out how to fund those and provide the services that our residents are expecting. With that, Madam Chair, I would answer any questions that you or members would have.
All right, questions from the committee. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I appreciate your comments, Mr. Fritz Singer, on, and I had written that down when you got to the local government aid and just kind of the cuts there, and the mayor had mentioned the loss of jobs, and or you had, but the high property taxes and so forth, and you know, I'm hoping there's other ways that we can deal with those issues in the tax committee, you know, with increased local government aid and so forth. So that's part of it. I know as some of these cities have come in asking for local option sales taxes has been the cuts in revenues, which makes a huge burden. On some of the projects I was looking at, and the mayor, you talked about kind of the regional service area that you have, but like for the swimming pool, for example, I presume there's fees probably charged over time that would bring in some costs there, and I guess on the community center, is that, sounds like that's in the works, but would you need a vote on that to approve of a construction and funding for a community center if you went ahead with that? I guess I'm looking a little bit more at these projects and trying to, in my mind, think of which ones are kind of regional impact and which ones are just kind of ones we need to do and so forth. Could you shed some light on that?
Mr. Mayor, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I think that if you look at the city of Cloquet, where we're located, as the people from Cloquet go pay sales taxes up in Duluth and Two Harbors and Proctor and Hermantown because they have significant shopping, we also, in so many different ways, all the smaller communities around us, we provide for that. The fact is that with our library system, if we built a community center, all those smaller communities, they do come to Cloquet. They come in through Cloquet from Sandstone, they come in from Hinckley to the south, all the way from Cromwell and McGregor to the west, and to the north it's Floodwood and Brookston, and even hitting in Virginia because it's a lot easier to shop in our area. None of the other communities have community pools. They don't have community centers except for maybe a small little building that they use it for their local city councils. So truly everything that we have in our city, including the library, historical society, they come in. The fees, we do charge fees for them, but we don't get enough money back to the fees to pay for. The other thing is the ambulance service that we have. We're looking at, with our high taxes, we're looking at actually charging the communities for the cost of our ambulance, which we subsidize right now because the federal government keeps on making cuts, as you're well aware. And so if we start charging the other communities what it really costs for our first responders to get out into the rural areas, it's going to have a devastating effect on those people of what they have to pay to the city of Cloquet.
Madam Chair,
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Would you have to have a vote on the community center to construct that and fund that? And I presume, is that just in the planning stages yet? Or
that really
right?
Mr. Algren, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Yeah. Representative Marquardt. It's really in the planning stage at this point in time because our pool was what we lose about 250,000 gallons of water a day in our pool. So the pool shut down. It was the sand bottom pool, which is virtually illegal in the state of Minnesota right now. So we're looking at a broader concept of what we can do for the community. And I do know that the community, because I do a lot of speaking at service clubs, both as court administrator and as the mayor of Cloquet, and also the Chamber of Commerce, and it's almost everyone I talk to is in favor of the sales tax to help us get through the time and with our industrial park. And we, as all small rural communities, we're always looking for good-paying jobs to come in and diversify. And that's a real key for Cloquet because we used to be the city of wood industry, and that's not going to last forever. So.
Thank you.
All right. Further questions? All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Did you want to come and testify for or against this bill? Okay. Former Representative Barb Sikora is here in the audience. Welcome. All right. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 885 be sent to the committee, be referred to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. With that, Representative House, you're supposed to be next. Is it possible so that I can let Representative Pawlowski go next? He's not on the committee.
Madam Chair, as serving under him on another committee, I will.
All right. Representative Pawlowski, if you'd please come to the table. I promise we'll have time for everyone. Again, Representative Pawlowski's file does not yet have a House file number. I do intend to have the full hearing on this bill, and then as soon as we get it, I will refer it without recommendation to the Committee on Taxes. With that, go ahead, Representative
Pawlowski. Madam Chair, thank you for your indulgence on hearing this bill, even though you were not in possession of it. I apologize for not having it drafted, but it was drafted on Senate side, and we all know what happens on Senate side. So they're not quite as efficient and thorough as we are on House side. With that, I am going to turn it over to my city manager, Eric Sorensen, but before I do that, the city of Winona has a history of retiring local option sales taxes early. It is one of only two cities in the state that has retired their local option sales tax as early as 2 years before they had to. So the credit goes to the city, and particularly to Eric Sorensen. He has been our city manager for almost 20 years. He has done an outstanding job, and in particular with local option sales taxes and projects. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn the testimony over to Mr. Sorensen.
Go ahead, Mr. Sorensen. State your name for the record. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, my name is Eric Sorensen. I'm the city manager for the city of Winona. Thank you. We have looked at all of our projects. Our public has been very clear about wanting one clear, specific project taken care of. It's on the east end of our community. And to take the congestion off of what you see called Mankato Avenue. This would bypass traffic into our industrial park, serving the region in that sense. And as important, if not more important to us, you can see where our hospital is located on Mankato. We're running now, traffic count is somewhere between 22 and 24,000 daily count. Mankato. The hospital has significantly expanded. Our industrial park has significantly expanded. And from our point of view, it's a safety project, and it's a project to better transport industrial community trucks in and out of our community to the interstate system. We are asking for authority for the one project, which you previously did approve in a multiple series of projects that we did bring before the public. The public said they were confused with the number of projects. We've narrowed it down to one, and it's the entrance way. It's the regional center entrance and exit to our community. We've taken care of the west end of our community now, and with the hospital situation the way it is, we want to make sure public safety is stressed in this project. And I would take any questions.
Questions from the committee? All right. With that, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right. If not, thank you very much, Representative Pulaski.
Thank you, Representative House. Thank you, too. I'll remember that tomorrow morning.
Thank you. All right, Representative House, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 442 be re-referred to the Tax Committee without recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Representative House. Go ahead.
Thank you. Members, the City of Emily approached me probably after mid-session last year and wanted a bill to do this, and I recommended to them that they first bring it before the voters, have them vote on it, and then come back. Lo and behold, they did that. This is for wastewater treatment. It is not does not have regional impact, but I would like to note that all the water that you drink in St. Paul comes through my district, and we'd like to keep it very clean as best we can for you folks. So in that sense, it does have statewide impact or regional impact. The folks have worked very hard. They've installed the system. They're done. And they want to use this effort to help pay for it. And I don't think we need to get into discussion about LGA and all the other things in the world that go wrong, but this is an avenue that they have. The voters have approved it, and I would like to see this happen this session. I do have one person with me that came from Iowa on his way home. And since he came so far, I thought I'd let him introduce himself and have a brief statement for you.
Great. Thank you, Representative House. Please go ahead and state your name for the record.
Hi. The name is Kent Reese, and it's spelled R-E-E-S. I reside at 19720 Anna Drive in Emily, and I am a city council member. It was over 7 years ago that the City of Emily made the decision to install a municipal wastewater system. Of the original cost estimate, which was $3.2 million, a grant of $2.4 million was obtained. There were some inflationary increases. Crow Wing County required some road upgrades in the project area, and there were some other project modifications that became necessary. And there was a loan of $1,637,000. Dollars, and that was obtained from the USDA Rural Development. The City of Emily, I think, is unique in that it encompasses 36 square miles, which is a traditional township. Emily is located in the northeast corner of Crow Wing County and is about 35 miles from Brainerd-Baxter area. All residential and commercial properties in the city, all their waste is handled currently by individual wastewater treatment systems or septic tanks. The new municipal wastewater system that was installed is in the core area of the city, and it will serve the majority of the commercial properties and many of the residential properties that were along some of the lakes in that area. The citizens of Emily believe that this infrastructure improvement is just one step in protecting the lakes, the rivers, and the groundwater of the community and of the state. The natural resources in this area is one of the principal reasons many of the families reside in this area. And, of course, tourism is an important part of the economy in the area. With the projected population growth of Minnesota, and particularly the population growth that is projected for Crow Wing County of 50,000 people in the next 23 years, the pressures on the environment are going to increase rather significantly. Based upon the information that we'd have from the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and if the legislature passes and approves the 0.5% of the local sales and use tax, it will still be necessary for Emily to budget a property tax levy. The local sales and use tax will just help in controlling property tax increases. In March of 2006, as Representative Howe had indicated, the City Council did pass a resolution indicating the interest in the sales and use tax. And as Representative Howe said, the voters approved a referendum in last fall's general election. The City Council passed a new, more detailed resolution reaffirming their position on the sales and use tax. And this resolution was passed on February 13, 2006, by the Emily City Council last Tuesday. I do have, if anybody's here, an aerial map of the whole 36 square miles. If anybody's interested in looking, it shows all the parcels of the property throughout the area. So if anybody has interest in that, and I will see the Representative Howard, we'll have a copy. I'll be getting one for him. So the City of Emily thanks you for the opportunity for present this brief amount of information on our infrastructure improvement. We really trust that you see the need for protecting the environment and support of the citizens of the City of Emily in the financial area. And I will close and just say thank you very much, and if you have any questions, I will answer them to the best of my ability.
All right. Questions from members. Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair and Representative Hauser, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Mr. Reese.
Reese, okay. Do you have the permit to go forward with this wastewater treatment plant? And if not, how does the Maple Lake Annandale court case affect that?
Mr. Reese.
Madam Chair, Representative. Yes, we do have a permit. The system was built. And is functioning today. They started connecting commercial and residential properties to it last fall. A few have connected before freeze-up. The rest of the properties and dwellings along the wastewater system will be connected up during this next construction season. The system is permitted by MPCA. We do have the permits and full operation of it.
Right,
and we have our wastewater hired a wastewater operator that will operate the system. So,
Madam Chair, just a point of clarification, and this is a tax to pay something that you already are paying for, and it is not being used for connection purposes.
Mr. Reese.
Madam Chair, yes, the original request for it did come in prior to, you know, as we started last year before this, but with the citizens, we went ahead, we built the system, and to get it up and operational. The citizens of Emily feel is basically a very proactive measure in protecting the environment of the state of Minnesota and the area around the City of Emily.
Representative Fulbright.
Go ahead.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just a couple questions. What's the population of Emily? Maybe you said that night.
Madam Chair, if I recall, the population is 867. So it's a very small population with a very large
Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, thank you. That would be about the annual payment's about $100 per resident, I suppose, if I'm calculating this correct.
Representative Marquardt.
I guess the question, do you know what the tax capacity roughly is? I'm trying to get an idea of what the property tax increase would be if you just put this on the tax rolls rather than doing a sales tax.
Okay. I've only been on the council a few months, and I don't know the answer to that question, what the total tax base is. When I first came on the city council, basically to fulfill a vacant position for a person that resigned and moved away from the community. I was appointed to the wastewater committee. There was information from the financial advisor that provided it to the city back at the beginning of the process that projected property tax increases, again, based on evaluation, could be anywhere from $50 to $100 to $200 or more per property.
Madam Chair?
Representative Marquardt.
Many times when the USDA comes in, there's a low-interest loan, they require you to set a certain amount for your, like, your wastewater fees. Was there an increase in wastewater fees for residents in Emily on, because of this project?
Mr. Reed.
Madam Chair, Representative, since this is a new system and the City of Emily did not have a wastewater system prior to this, it is all new. The city did have pass an ordinance, and there are fees for all the dwellings that are connected to the municipal wastewater system, and they are in the ordinance. There's a flat fee for residential, and there's a different flat fee for commercial, and then each residential is the flat fee and 3,000 gallons of water. Commercial is the flat fee and 1,000 gallons of water. And then for additional, there's a fee for additional gallonage beyond the base figure. And that is in the ordinance that was passed by the city last year.
All right. Further questions? Yeah. One more. Representative
Okay, well, that's fine. I guess I'm just, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if, you know, usually on something like this, there might be an increase in rate that would help pay for a project like this. I mean, as they, you know, that would just be included into the rates rather than, I mean, and if that's the case, then of that $1.67 million with interest, I mean, some of the sales tax that would be coming in would be, not all of that would be needed, because if you're up the rate some to cover that, some of it's going to be paid by ratepayers. And so the sales tax wouldn't be, I mean, you could, it's almost like there'd be an excess of sales tax revenue coming in. Maybe I'm not making that very clear, but that's fine. I mean, I can't believe there probably wasn't some sort of an increase in user rates to help cover this. Or why, if there isn't, there shouldn't be.
Representative House.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I believe, and I will have the correct answer in tax committee, but I believe the added cost per $100,000 property was estimated to be $160 a year, right in that neighborhood. And then the fee of the hookups, and again, there are not that many people that are paying the fee because they're not hooked up yet, but the fee is basically going to pay the operating costs and the sales taxes to help pay off the loan. But again, I will have all of that information. My main goal with the City of Emily was that they vote for and approve this before we came before you. And they've done that. And now once we get to the tax committee, we will have those absolute numbers.
Thank you very much.
All right. With that, further questions? All right. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? All right, hearing none, Representative House renews his motion that House File 442 be re-referred to the Tax Committee without recommendation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative House. First, we have Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, and we are running slightly behind, so I had originally promised them about 30 minutes, and we're going to ask them to, you know, be about 20 to 25 minutes. Please come to the table and state your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us. My name is Roy Terwilliger. I serve as chair of the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. Joining me today is Bill Lester, who's the executive director of the Sports Commission. So thanks for taking the time and for the opportunity to visit a little bit about the Sports Commission and what we're about. You're the timekeeper, I guess. You can kind of give us the hook when you see fit.
All right.
But it's our pleasure to be here. We have, in addition to myself, members of the commission, present Vice Chair Loanne Train, and next to her, Ray Waldron, and I believe those are the only members of the commission. The Metrodome has been operating since 1982, and this spring will mark the 25th anniversary of the Metrodome, and during that time, over 73 million people have visited the Dome for one event or another, literally hundreds and hundreds of events, everything from the Minnesota Twins and the winning of two World Series to two Final Fours, a Super Bowl in 1992, and we host about 300 event days a year. We have 100 days basically taken up between the Twins and the Gophers and the Vikings, and the other 200 event days just are our various events such as high school playoffs, high school soccer playoffs, University of Minnesota baseball, Lemung New Year, Promise Keepers. If you're so inclined last Saturday night, maybe you were able to go down and see Monster Trucks. And I don't see any of you holding your ears, so you must not have been there. It was noisy, but anyway, it's what we like to say, Minnesota's community living room, and has been a very major venue for people across the upper Midwest to come to Minneapolis and to be in Minneapolis for these events. Let me just describe, if I could, very briefly, the history of the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. It was established by legislation in 1977. At that time, it was determined that there would be a multi-purpose stadium built. However, it was site-neutral, and there was the backup tax for it was going to be the metro-wide liquor tax. The site was selected in 1979. The current site, which is in downtown Minneapolis, as all of you know, 20 acres, sitting in kind of the heart of the city, right at the crossroads of two interstates. And Minneapolis liquor and lodging tax assessed and was collected was initially assessed and was collected through 1984. The Met Council issued $55 million worth of bonds to construct the facility, and a private development corporation assisted in acquiring the property. As I mentioned, it's a multi-purpose stadium. It's one of the last multi-purpose stadiums constructed in the country, housing the Twins, the Gophers, and the Vikings. Membership of the commission, prior to the selection of the site, initially it was a commission that was selected by the governor, appointed by the governor. Once the site was selected and the Minneapolis liquor tax was and lodging tax was used to back up the bonds, the legislation was amended to allow the city to appoint six of the seven, the seventh person being the chair appointed by the governor who cannot live in the city of Minneapolis. Our job, according to statute and charged by the legislature, is to preserve professional football and baseball in the state of Minnesota. We take that job very seriously, and we've worked very closely with the teams over the years to try to maximize their opportunity for success, trying to find ways to make certain that the facility runs well, that we use the latest technology, LED signage, whatever types of new innovations we can have in the area of advertising and such, we've added to that. Just to the one side of the Metrodome where the light rail comes by is the Metrodome Plaza. That was recently significantly renovated and improved and has a great complement now of concessions and restroom facilities. And the teams receive 100% of the net revenues from that. I mentioned the light rail line comes through there and does make a stop. And the ridership levels to and from events there has far exceeded the expectations of the Metropolitan Transit planning people. And so it has worked out very, very well. Construction of a new fan-friendly ticket booth area outside of the two gates F and H was just constructed for a cost of about $300,000 to give fans instant access to the best possible tickets. A couple of years ago, new turf was installed for the cost of about $2 million. And during the last 2 years, we have constructed in the place of 16 suites, we have constructed two terrace suites, which have been a very real success and has given us the opportunity to evaluate a little bit more of the new type of facility seating that is available in other new venues across the country. Bonds for the construction of the Metrodome were defeased early in 1998, primarily through the sale of the Metropolitan or the Met Center ICE property. And since that time, the admissions taxes on the tickets that have, for the events for the Twins, Vikings, and Gophers have been refunded to the teams. The Vikings have received over $24 million in refunds, the Twins over $16 million. The Gophers over $3.5 million, and these are current estimates. The commission, as a landlord for the Twins, Gophers, and Vikings, have been working, of course, with you and other policymakers in these last years to see what can be done about the new home for the Twins and the Gophers. You'll hear more about the Twins later, and of course, the Gophers. Plans are to be in their new stadium in 2009, the Twins hopefully in 2010. The Vikings football use agreement expires in 2011. Following the 2011 season, the current football use agreement expires. And so we are about planning the long-term solution in accordance with our charge to what do we do to make certain that we can retain professional football in Minnesota and keep them here hopefully for another 30 years, which would take them to 2041. Seems like a long ways away, but I'm back in 1997 or 77. I don't think 2007 seemed that long away either. The team has indicated a desire to maintain their home in downtown Minneapolis. We have significant infrastructure investments that are there. We have the light rail that comes by the facility, the so-called Capital or Central Corridor line would join with the current Hiawatha line right along the side of the Metrodome, and of course the North Star line would be coming in over by the Target Center area, the Twinsville area, and would join with the LRT there. So it is in a good particular location as far as already having infrastructure improvements put there. Commission has been, as the owner of this public asset, thinks it has an obligation to explore the options related to the future. We started doing that this past fall, started looking, with various groups of people at the downtown east area of Minneapolis, and then in a responsible way feel we have addressed the 20 acres that are currently where the Metrodome stands to make certain that as we go forward that we responsibly plan for that future of that spot, as well as plan for the future of a Vikings team still being here. We're currently engaged in that process. We've engaged a company called Roma Design Group out of San Francisco to look at our current facility and give us the idea of the art of the possible. They've been joined by the Heisington Kegler Group, which is a local Minneapolis firm that was active in planning that overall general downtown east area before. We are working with the Vikings closely to prepare a schedule and to facilitate coming together with a proposal that at some particular point we will be ready to present. We will invite all stakeholders to comment, including the Vikings, of course, the legislature, various offices that are appropriate, the governor's office, of course, business and labor leaders, the general public, the neighborhood groups, and we plan to spend a good deal of time in working with these groups to make certain we have all the input necessary and that it is a thoughtful, carefully laid out process. We look forward to completing this and reporting back to you when it is completed. And as I mentioned, we take very seriously our charge to be good stewards of the public property, to take very seriously the charge of retaining professional football in Minnesota and working with the groups as to what is the art of the possible. And so I thank you for this opportunity for these remarks. And Bill, would you like to add anything?
Just any questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Lester.
Madam Chair, I won't add anything, but we'll be glad to respond to questions.
All right, questions from members. I have a question. I believe I heard that the proposal for the Vikings has been tabled or taken off for a little while. Can you kind of tell us what the status is and where you're going from here? Mr. Terwilliger.
Madam Chair, as I mentioned, the Roma Design Group has been engaged to put together some thoughts and design thoughts as to the art of the possible for that area. Initially, when we talked to them, we were saying we'd like to have that in by February 1st, February 15th, in that range. They're still doing some work on that, but the important thing is we have some other considerations as we get into looking at this. Other considerations we're trying to look at, we've engaged several other consulting groups to do parts and parcel of this, and so we are really not ready to talk about it. So it's, we have a general idea, but until we remove as many variables as we can, we would like to retain the privilege of making certain that it's as thorough as possible.
All right. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What seating capacity are you looking at, or do you have presently have?
Madam Mr. Chair, we Williams. Currently have 65,000 seats for Viking football. The Twins take it down in their current usage to about 49,000 during the season, but in postseason they increased that, I think, to 56,000, if I remember correctly. There's been not enough discussion on the future proposal to give you a reasonably accurate number.
Mr. Lester.
Madam Chair, members, I did want to reemphasize the point that having the professional teams is what allows you to have the facility. And once you have the facility, that is what allows you to become the state's rec room. That's what allows you to bring in all the high school football playoffs when we have the Storm of the Century. That's what allows you to have all these the vast and varied events that become such an important part of the fabric of people's lives. But you don't build those large capacity venues in and of themselves. It has to be attached to a team, and the trend in the industry now is towards single purpose rather than multi-purpose. And it's been a marvelous investment for the state of Minnesota. It's paid for itself. The debt has been retired. And what we're looking forward to is what can you do with the next generation of facilities that's going to allow us to continue to host these signature events that become such an important part of the lives of our people and our recreation for our people.
Questions for members? Representative Shumper.
Madam Chair, gentlemen, did you say the present Met Stadium has paid for itself? What were your concerns?
Mr. Terwilliger.
Madam Chair, as I mentioned, the bonds were defeased in 1998, so there is no debt on the current facility. There were proceeds from the sale of land during the Mall of America where the old Met Ice Center sat. The sale of those bonds gave us enough money to pay off the current defeats of the bonds that were there. Bill, you may wish to add.
No, that's correct. The debt, Madam Chair, members, the debt has been retired. Okay. It costs about $13 million a year to operate the facility. So the current use agreements with the teams and other users of the facilities, the facility is what allows us to pay for its ongoing operation. But the debt has been retired, as the Chair said.
Okay. And, and contrasting that with the proposed Twin Stadium, the $400 million that's being invested in that, will that be, how does that compare? I guess I don't understand.
Mr. Terwilliger, would you like to have the Twins or the Ballpark Authority answer that after? Or?
But Madam Chair, I think that would probably be appropriate. Bill may like to add something to it, but I think it would be good if we could have your next group before you is the Sports Authority.
All right. Mr. Lester?
Madam Chair, I did want to say that the industry has evolved far away from what it was in 1977 when this body created the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. And once teams such as Baltimore for the Orioles and Denver with Coors Fields, once they started using public money to help fund those facilities, they created an uneven playing field, and it's created this situation that we have today where public money, increasing amounts of public money have gone into these facilities, and there isn't a single facility in the country now that has the new one, or this latest generation of facilities that pays for itself. They just don't pay for itself. They have an investment by the public sector.
One more question.
And so you envision the proposed Viking proposal to be similar to
what previously happened with the stadium or with the Twins proposal?
Madam Chair, I believe it's representative. I believe it's a little premature to really speculate exactly how this will come back in.
Oh,
there's
okay.
There will be, as I'm sure everybody recognizes, a significant contribution on the part of the team, but to get into percentages and ranges would be a little premature.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, the bonds originally were backed up and for a few years were paid for with the liquor and hotel tax within the city of Metropolitan Minneapolis or in a district, part of the district of Minneapolis anyway. When those are no longer needed, what happened to those sales tax?
Mr. Twilliger.
Funds.
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Representative Solberg, it was 1984. They were no longer needed because there were sufficient revenues from operations of the stadium that it was not required for debt service and paying for the operation and also capital improvement. I don't recall that there was a repeal. I believe it went to pay for, the city of Minneapolis was required originally to pay for their own convention center. I think some of those funds were used to defease that those bonds on the convention center, but they were, as of 84, they were no longer required for the operation of the Metrodome.
Representative Solberg?
That's it. I knew what the answer to the question was before I asked it.
All right. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Twilliger, I think, said he wouldn't speculate. I will speculate. since we have both of these subjects before us today, with, I think, just for information, but I think we all are very clear that the absolute only way the Twins bill passed was because everyone else in the state could vote for it and say to their taxpayers, you're not going to pay. And that is why it passed. And I don't know, what would the Hennepin taxpayers do if we tried that one more time to them on our next team? So I believe that is not going to happen again.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Further questions from members? Oh, Representative Solberg. Representative Hausman?
No, that was a
All right. Further questions? If not, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, we appreciate it.
All right. Next, we have the Minnesota Ballpark Authority. We have about 25 minutes left of committee time, and we will adjourn on time. So please come forward, state your name for the record, and we'll get started. Do you need another chair? No?
We'd love to have our other commissioner.
Okay, certainly. If you just could grab them another chair, that would be great. All right, please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Kramer. I'm the chair of the Minnesota Ballpark Authority. And I have with me, as you all know, Barb Sikora, former representative and a current member of the commission, as well as Mike Bekich, who serves as vice chair, and also Dan Kenny, our executive director. Madam Chair and members of the committee, as you may remember, the authority was established by legislation just last May. Several of you were members of the legislature last year when the Twins Ballpark passed. So for some of you, we may be going over some old ground, but for the new members, I'd like to spend just a moment on the legislation that was passed, talk about what the Ballpark Authority was directed to do, and then I'll ask Mr. Kenny to provide a quick update on some of the current activities that are underway. Purpose of the authority was to serve as a new political subdivision in the state of Minnesota to ultimately own the Twins Ballpark. In addition, we play a role along with Hennepin County and the Twins Ball team to provide for the construction of this facility. You crafted a rather intricate set of interrelationships among these various parties that we're all working hard to implement effectively. As you remember, the intent of the legislature is that the ballpark be open for opening day in the 2010 Major League Baseball season. And in order to accomplish that goal, you directed us as the authority to do a number of things with due speed from an organizational development standpoint. And I'll just review those very quickly. The authority is a five-member board with two appointments by Hennepin County, two by the governor, and one by the city of Minneapolis. You directed the various appointing authorities to finalize their appointments within 30 days of final passage, and all were able to accomplish that. Commissioner Secor and I are appointed by Hennepin County. Mike Beckage and John Wade from Rochester are gubernatorial appointments. And then Joan Campbell, former city council member in Minneapolis, former member of the Metropolitan Council, is appointed by the city of Minneapolis. And I believe brief files of all the members are in the packet that you were provided. You also were very clear about when we had to have our first meeting and how we ought to proceed initially, and we've accomplished all of those goals. We got our first meeting underway within 40 days of enactment. We have monthly meetings. We have bylaws based largely on the bylaws of the Sports Facilities Commission, which you just heard from. And as the legislation required, we also have a website for public communication, again, with some details provided in the packet. You also required that we hire an executive director within 30 days of that first meeting. And again, we were able to do that, and pleased to have with us today Dan Kenny, who is our executive director. Dan has extensive experience in local government, both at the municipal and the county level, including a stint on the Minneapolis Planning Commission, and was also involved with Hennepin County through the many years of negotiations with the Twins that led to, ultimately, the legislation which we're discussing today. So with that, I'm going to ask Dan to quickly go over some of the current activities, and then we'd all be happy to stand for questions.
All right. Mr. Kinney, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I passed out a second handout, and I apologize for the quality. I was working alone today on President's Day, so my staff wasn't able to give me the high-resolution pictures I wanted to share with you. But I thought it would be useful to look at a site map to get an orientation to where the ballpark site is. The first map shows the outline of the ballpark, and it shows you how the Target Center is closer to the Central Business District. And between the Target Center and the ballpark site, you have 394 running through it, and the Third Avenue distributor ramps, the TAD ramp, also known as the ABC ramps, are in the picture there. City planning documents refer to 394 as the cut. In other words, the dividing line between the Central Business District and the North Loop neighborhood. The ballpark project represents the first opportunity, really, to heal that cut. And so that's one of the things we're working towards, is creating great pedestrian connections between the Central Business District and the new ballpark facility. The second map that's provided also shows you the various landowners that currently control the site. The parcel of land owned by the city of Minneapolis, there is a purchase agreement that Hennepin County has entered into, and that can be executed at any time. That's under the county's control, so we're in good shape there. And also, detailed discussions are going on with the Minnesota Department of Transportation regarding their property that's in the ballpark project site. As you know, there's a number of actors involved in this project: the Ballpark Authority, Hennepin County, the team, the City of Minneapolis, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, the Met Council with the North Star Project, and of course, MnDOT. The Ballpark Authority is very fortunate. We have Ed Hunter serving as our project manager. Many of you may remember Ed. He was the project manager for the Hiawatha LRT project, and he has great working relationships with North Star, the Met Council, and the City of Minneapolis. The authority, the county, the city, and the team, and the project designers have been meeting on a weekly basis since August to coordinate planning, schedules, and future activities, and we've made great progress. One of the major areas that we've been working on over the last couple months is finalizing the development agreement, the use and lease agreements, and the grant agreement. The development agreement is the document that will describe how the project will be built, and the county, the team, and the authority are all parties to that agreement. The use and lease agreements are between the team and the ballpark authority, and this will outline how the facility will be managed and utilized over the next 30 years. Finally, the grant agreement is the agreement between the authority and the county, and this is how the funds and the assets will be granted over from the county to the ballpark authority so we can build the project. Lastly, I just want to touch on some elements that were in the legislation that we're working towards. The first one is LEED certification, and LEED stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. We are making good progress on reaching that certification. The Ballpark Authority has reached out to Professor John Carmody of the University of Minnesota to get his input, and the project team is also working to achieve the state's Sustainable Building Guidelines, known as B3. We're also working very hard to ensure women and minority-owned businesses participate in this construction project. At our meeting last Friday, the Ballpark Authority authorized me to engage the Metropolitan Economic Development Agency to improve that participation and also engage an outside party to monitor WMBE efforts once the project's underway. On the design, the authority has approved the concept and programming. We did that in December. And the approval of the schematic design that was slated for February is currently postponed, but we hope that will be rescheduled shortly. In terms of site preparation, good planning is being done on utility relocation, and the first bid package was set to be released on February 21st, but that work is being put on hold on a week-by-week basis, pending the outcome of the county's negotiations on the land sale. Another big issue we're working through is the Cedar Lake bike trail and also negotiations with the railroad. BNSF has expressed strong interest in moving their mainline operations out from underneath the ballpark concourse, and our preliminary study suggests this change is possible and would improve the ballpark's functionality and also present an opportunity for the Cedar Lake bike trail to run along the rail corridor, which was the preferred alternative. So we're very excited about that possibility. Lastly, the 2006 legislation called for the creation of a city-county implementation committee. This committee is charged with an alternative land use approval process. It's a 10-member committee, 5 members appointed by Hennepin County, 5 members appointed by the City of Minneapolis. They've been meeting since November, and to date, this group has done good work on finalizing the alignment of the bike trail, the integration of LRT along the 5th Street side of the ballpark, and also a mitigation plan for the closure of 3rd Avenue up to 7th Street. The next meeting of the Implementation Committee is scheduled for March 7th. Let's move that. So that's
all right.
An update.
Madam Chair, if I could just invite Commissioners Sikora and Bekic to make any comments, and we'd be happy to stand for your questions.
All right. I'll go first, Madam Chair, members. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a little different circumstance for me than it was the last 12 years, but pleasure nonetheless. And I think, you know, you can tell that it's rather complicated when you hear all the different parties. And part of our job, I think, as the authority is to try to keep all these parties working together. And then providing oversight, because the authority is the one that's responsible for the fact that this is a public investment, and we have to make sure that we are investing wisely, that our contracts make sense, that we're not overpaying, that we are watching the taxpayer dollar. And so in that respect, we're going to be a fiscal watchdog, protect that investment. And also, we have input into the plan. Everybody has an idea of what the new ballpark should look like. We have been to Philadelphia and Pittsburgh to look at their stadiums, because they are probably, their sites are similar to the size that we have to work with, especially Pittsburgh. And it's pretty exciting, really, to see them and get some sense of what might be possible for us to do. So I think it's going to look very different from what you're used to seeing when you go to the baseball game, when and if this is all completed. And then over time, of course, the authority continues to be the owner of the ballpark and responsible for proper maintenance, for upkeep, for any capital investment that might be required, et cetera, updates that would be needed over the years, and also figuring out a way that after it's paid off and there's no bond money coming in, then we need to consider how, you know, we will still be able to do the proper maintenance and capital investment for the ballpark. So with that, any questions you might have, Mr. Vekic? Did you want to make a statement?
Madam
Please
Chair,
state your name. Go ahead.
Michael Vekic, Minnesota Ballpark Authority. Madam Chair, I think my colleagues have pretty well covered the details, so we'll stand for questions.
All right. First is Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, on the first page of your handout, you have a black lines and the blue lines. Can you indicate to me what the black lines represent?
Sure.
And I see there are two different parts of the black line.
Sure. Mr. Kinney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Solberg. The black line represents the outline of the ballpark, and the blue line actually represents the pedestrian ways. If you look towards Target Center, you see a rather wide section, which will become the main corridor out of the Central Business District into the ballpark, which will become kind of our plaza, if you will. And then the same thing will be created on the 7th Street side to make sure that we can handle the pedestrian load for this 40,000-seat venue.
Madam Chair,
Representative Goldberg.
The pedestrian end is over the freeway?
That's correct.
And, Madam Chair, I see some additional black lines to the left of the main park.
Right,
Mr. Kinney.
I apologize. Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, that's actually structured parking that the Twins will be constructing with their own funds. So that's part of the project, but not part of the ballpark itself.
Representative Solberg?
That's good. Thank you.
All right. Further questions from members? Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe the director can respond to this question. You talked a little bit about your vendors. Could you speak a little more on what type of vendors you're looking at and who are you, again, working with?
Mr. Kinney.
Madam Chair, Representative Dominguez, Mortenson is the general contractor for the project, and we're working very closely not only with Mortenson but with the Hennepin County Board to establish workforce goals and participation goals. As it relates to the operation of the ballpark, that conversation is one we're having with the Minnesota Twins because they're going to have day-to-day operational control of the ballpark, so we want to have that conversation with the team.
Representative Dominguez.
Are you also intending to work with maybe some of the Job Corps areas of populations that are in that like OICs and things like that?
Madam Chair.
Sorry, Mr. Kramer.
Right. Representative Dominguez. The answer is yes. That, in addition to the goals, as Mr. Kennedy stated, there will be a program put in place to really help achieve the goals, both business participation and workforce participation, who can sell goods and services to the general contractor, Mortons in this case, and who's actually on the site doing the work. Two sets of goals, programs to help achieve both, and especially in the workforce participation area, it's critical that we reach out to the local organizations that both reach people in the community and can help provide the training that they'll need to be successful employees of the contractor or the subcontractors who actually be building this facility over the next 3 years. So I think that this set of goals and the program put in place to achieve the goals will be certainly comparable to what we've seen in other large public projects in recent years, the convention center expansion in Minneapolis, the public library as two good examples.
Well, that's a rewarding, excuse me, Madam Chair, that's a rewarding, for me anyway, that's my district. And
right.
Just wanted to make sure that those operations were working within the community-based organizations.
All right. Now I have one. I think the question everyone is, dying to know the answer to, what impact do you believe we will have going forward if there continues to be a problem with the site selection? So with that, Mr. Kramer.
Madam Chair, thank you. We're surprised that you've asked that question.
Sure.
We actually spent a fair amount of time on that topic at our meeting Friday of last week, and I think the way I would summarize it is that, as Mr. Kinney indicated, the first bid package for this project was scheduled to be issued on Wednesday. So until Wednesday, the project is still on schedule. It's not going to be issued on Wednesday. So for every week that goes past that first bid package can't be issued, then the project begins to fall a little bit behind. What the construction professionals tell us, both those employed by public agencies like the county and the Ballpark Authority and the folks at Mortenson who will be responsible for building this on behalf of the Twins and all of us, is that if it's a matter of weeks, then that's very manageable. If it stretches into a matter of months, then that becomes a much more significant matter in terms of feasibility of meeting the 2010 deadline as well as cost pressures, because you can make up for time on a construction site, but the trade-off is it's more costly. You bring more people in, you bring more equipment in, et cetera, et cetera. So as long as it's a matter of weeks, I think we all feel it's very manageable. If it stretches to become a matter of months, then that's a much more significant concern, and we just don't know yet whether it will be weeks or months. We're hoping for weeks.
Well, that just begs a follow-up question, which would be, how will you know whether it will be weeks or months, and when will you know?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Kramer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, as you're aware, the legislation really places with Hennepin County the responsibility for securing the site, and they are working diligently to accomplish that. The Ballpark Authority is involved as appropriate, but it really is the county's role to achieve this site control. They have initiated condemnation proceedings, so that's one way to secure possession of the site should the county decide to walk down that road fully. That would resolve the question of when the project can start on site, but leave open the question of what's the ultimate value for the land that's condemned. And given the cap that's been placed on land and infrastructure, that creates an uncertainty that for now is problematic. So condemnation is a possibility, but there are still conversations underway among the various parties to try to secure a final resolution of the land, either short of that or with full knowledge of what the ultimate exposure for land might be. So that's a long way to say we can't stand here today and tell you exactly when or how, but what we can say with absolute confidence is that there are efforts underway to resolve this issue. Just can't be sure exactly how it will play out in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kramer, I don't know that you know the answer to this question, but I'm looking at the map, and Representative Solver was talking about the black line and the blue line. And the $90 million cap amendment, as you know, I'm sure that I and Representative Abrams offered that amendment to cap the land. And also what many people do not know is my amendment to the $90 million cap also made certain that the land could not be 1,000 feet beyond the site. And that's in the final legislation. So there's not just a cap on the spending. There's a cap on the geographic location, which is often not recognized by people. Are you in the 1,000-foot cap here when you get out to Target Center and the blue line?
Mr. Kramer?
I'm sure Mr. Kenny, I think, can probably respond to that.
Mr. Kenny?
Yes, so we can provide. We actually have the map showing the 1,000 feet that we'd be happy to send so people can see where it lands.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lincheski, a follow-up?
Okay.
All right. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one follow-up. What is the seating capacity going to be like, and is there going to be suites and those kind of things in there?
Mr. Kramer.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Dominguez. The current projection is that there will be 40,000 seats at the ballpark, and I don't recall the exact number of suites. I'm sure Mr. Kenny knows.
Mr. Kenny.
We can get that exact number to you, but I will also say there are also room for 2,000 standing room only positions throughout the ballpark. And if anybody's toured newer ballparks, those are some of the best spots, just like at Xcel Energy Center where you can stand and watch the game from the concourses. There really are great views all over the ballpark, outfield, infield, upper deck, lower deck. So, but we can get you specifics on the program.
All right, we have 4 minutes left, and we have two more questions.
Our score members, it's somewhere around 65, but we'll get the exact number.
All right, Representative Solberg.
Just a very quick one, Madam Chair. One of the
selling points of this piece of property was the proximity to the train coming in. And I heard you say you're in negotiations to relocate that. Make me feel comfortable about that.
Mr. Kramer.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I think there's less to that statement than you might imagine. What's really being discussed is a slight bowing of the BN track on the site of the ballpark closest to the county's energy recycling facility.
So you made me feel comfortable.
Representative Solberg, all right. All right, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Obviously, all of us recognize that the primary negotiations on the land represent with Hennepin County, the Twins, and the landowners. I'm wondering to what extent the authority has been asked by any of those parties to get involved. You made a reference earlier that you were asked to do some things. Can you give us more information about how and when you've been asked and what you've been able to do to help bring about some resolution here?
Mr. Kramer.
Madam Chair, Representative Landon, I would say within the last week to 10 days, the ballpark authority has been at the table, so to speak, particularly with the Twins organization, to try to fashion an approach between the county authority and the Twins to kind of guarantee that the final land price, whether it's determined through negotiation or through a condemnation award, would not unduly compromise the investment in the surrounding infrastructure, the ballpark, so that the total experience is what everybody expects and wants to see out of this very large public investment. So that may involve some activities surrounding the parking ramps that the Twins are scheduled to build. We don't know exactly what our role will be in the final solution, but we've been at the table for the last week or 10 days and, again, are very hopeful that the right formula can be found to secure this last piece of the puzzle so that all these wonderful plans that have been made can move full speed ahead and we can meet the legislative deadline.
All right. What, Representative Lanning?
Just as a follow-up. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I would hope that the authority would do whatever is capable of your doing to help resolve this very sticky issue. Thank you.
All right. Final question, Representative Shumper.
Mr. Kramer, if it went full length, how long could the condemnation proceedings take?
Mr. Kramer.
Madam Chair, Representative and perhaps former Mayor Lanning can help me here. If it went full length, it could result ultimately in a jury determination. The first determination is made by condemnation commissioners that the judge overseeing the case appoints with input from the team and the landowners and the county. Either side could appeal the award made by those commissioners, and then it literally goes to a jury trial, and at that point it's anybody's guess. I think it could be 12 months or more before a final number is determined through that route. That's my recollection anyway of how long these things can take.
All right, I guess we do have one more question. Representative Hausman, last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't part of the negotiation of this bill, but how in the heck did this bill get written with a site-specific reference and no understanding of how that site would be acquired?
Who would like that one? Ms. Sikora.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman. I don't quite know why it was done that way, but that was what the Twins and the county came in with, and that was what they wanted.
All right. With that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.